Welcome to Pediatric Dentistry from A to T, the podcast that covers all aspects of pediatric dentistry, clinical, business, wellness for dentists, and leading-edge science. It's all right here. And now your host, Dr. Jared Johnson.
Welcome. On today's show, we have Drew Loki. He spent the last 20 years working for one of the largest DSOs, Smile Brands affiliate Midwest Dental. Over the years, Drew led Midwest's efforts in practice staffing and retention efforts, practice acquisitions, and doctor recruitment. By the time Midwest Dental was sold in December of 2020 to Smile Brands, Drew had been instrumental in growing the business and team to a group of 26 practices in Wisconsin and Minnesota to one that spanned to 270 practices in 13 states. With the transition to Midwest Dental's new entity, Drew was selected to lead the entire talent acquisition department on a national level. When he left in June of 2020, the organization supported over 650 practices in 30 states, and Drew is now the director of operations at Edge Advise. Welcome. It is great to have you on the show to talk all things DSOs today.
Thanks so much, Dr. Johnson. It's a sincere pleasure. Thanks for the invite, and I'm looking forward to just chatting a little bit.
I think when we look at DSOs for especially young dentists, is we have a perception problem, I think a generational problem with maybe more mature dentists. I don't want to call them older, but they have this stigma of DSOs bad. You don't want to do that. And I don't think that's true. I think DSOs have a market need and there's a fit for someone coming out of practice. What are your thoughts on, you've worked with DSOs for years and have great experience, and what are some of the things that you can maybe shed light onto this issue that the perception of DSOs is negative when I don't think it should be?
Yeah, there's a lot there to unpack. So good thing that we're friends. You can keep me on task. Okay. So, I think it's just, thanks for not saying old, but I am old. When you listen to my biography, when it started in 1998, that spans quite a bit of time. And so I've seen different chapters, and I think I'm going to sound like a dad here, but when I look at the industry and the state of our culture as a whole, we want immediate results. And so we kind of paint people with the same broad brush. And, you know, you can't make a generalized statement that DSOs are bad or good. Each one of us is at a different stage in our career or a different stage in our personal life. And you have to be able to compartmentalize what's priority for you at this point in time and then map that out. And in my biased opinion, I think a good recruiter allows any dentist to do that. And so, yes, I would be very hypocritical to get up here and say, you know, DSOs are bad. The vast majority of doctors that I talk to now, I was at the University of Iowa last week, in their head, yes, they want to go to private practice, but you have to have the time and make the time with the candidates to really strip away the layers of the onion, so to speak, to find out why do they feel that way? Because a good DSO will take the time to introduce themselves and their model, because DSOs can't also be painted with the same broad brush, just like private practices can't. And I think the biggest flaw in our recruitment arena is the need for speed. I get that, but that's where I see a lot of mistakes happen. And, you know, the old adage, time is money. If you can get surrounded through your school or through third parties, that's probably the biggest takeaway that I had on my notes this morning before our call was, start to surround yourself early in school with people that maybe don't share the same views, but are going to be able to offer different perspective as opposed to just focusing so much on getting through school. I hear that so much. The curriculum is so focused on the science of dentistry, which it has to be, that a lot of the younger doctors just don't even know where to start. And so they get advice at the school that DSOs are bad or DSOs are a great spot. And that doesn't necessarily fit either party. So I don't think I answered your question, but I think the general theme that I would say overarches today is force yourself to think outside the box of the curriculum at the school early on and ask the questions of what's most important to you, because a lot of times DSOs are a great answer, but a lot of time they're not either. You just can't make that broad brush stroke. And I think, like I said, in today's society, we want quick answers. We're going to move fast and it will feel like that. But if you take a more protracted approach, like you did with your career, you're going to be pretty happy. So
the answer, I would encourage echoing that, people to explore different aspects of dentistry. I think for what I see now is I see a lot of younger dentists coming out, going into DSOs. And I think the way, especially with when COVID hit and there were shutdowns and the clinical experience just wasn't there, I think the DSO is a great fit for those to get some experience, learn the business side of things. So you're not coming out trying to learn how to practice dentistry and manage staff and insurance claims and aging and all that all at once. I think it's a great also option for those that don't know exactly where they want to be in their career. It offers definitely portability, for you're not tied down. Once you buy an office or move into that aspect of your career, you can't really get up and, you know, move states or move to a different area. So I think exploring the options, getting to know people. And I also think the stigma comes from the, like you said, the pressure to perform. And Drew, I will tell you that I've seen bad dentistry come from private practices. I've seen bad dentistry come from DSOs. It's not the DSO that's producing the bad dentistry. It's the dentist. So I think that can kind of dispel some of that stigma that's behind it. And I think if we keep having this conversation about how you can find the right DSO, find the right fit, find someone that's going to nurture you, it can be a great way to move forward with this conversation about dental support organizations. Because I know so many of my friends that are at a Midwest dental that you recruited that are so happy there, and they wouldn't go any other way. You've seen this cycle of DSOs, you know, kind of take over. I think their market share is around 10% of dentists right now. About 30% of new dentists will end up going into a DSO. But what do you see as DSOs are, and they're here to stay, and I think solo practices too, but what do you see in the market as far as DSOs and private practitioners? Are we all going to be a Walgreens or a CVS someday? Or are we going to have private practices? What's the forecast that you see in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, that's, I could take that a lot of different directions. So your numbers are accurate compared to what I see and experience firsthand, is on a lot of levels, especially at the school, it may feel like DSOs are taking over and they're the only option. Well, that's prevalent because they have a dedicated talent acquisition team that can be at the school multiple times a year, whereas private practitioners are busy seeing their patients, and they typically are the head of human resources, the head of marketing, the accounting, all things. And so, but when you take a step back and look at it analytically, the amount of market share that the DSOs in totality represent is a drop in the bucket compared to private practice. And so, yes, I think that their DSOs are going to continue to grow, but I don't think they're ever going to overtake the industry to where that's the only practice option for dentists. At least in my lifetime, I just can't look that far down the track and see that happening. But I'd kind of like to tie it back. And I think that there's pros and cons to everything. In living it and seeing it, appreciate your perspective too on the quote unquote bad dentistry component. One thing that DSOs have in their favor is that structure and that systematic approach, because there are certain things that a practitioner can benefit from having that, especially a new grad. Or honestly, if you look at the other end of the spectrum, a lot of doctors over my career came to us and said, listen, I'm just burnt out. I can't keep up with all of the regulations and what I need to do in terms of just something as simple as OSHA or HIPAA, and keeping up with the, years ago, it was the shift from traditional radiography to digital. And they appreciate the environment that a DSO provides because they have that structure, they have that continuity, and allows them actually more time to focus on providing good care for their patients. But what I think makes dentistry unique and what I really have always appreciated about it is a lot of times the doctors that get into the dentistry have this vision of a private solo fee-for-service practice that they're making decisions as an owner, but then also providing that care. And, you know, to your point, I think both parties, both private and DSOs, are better served when they can take a step back and look at the big picture of what it is they need to focus on. And so the DSOs have that structure. Some, for a lot of doctors, that's great. But for other doctors, you know, that's a negative. They want to be the unilateral leader and make every decision A to Z. And that's a lot, private practice allows that, but it also carries with it a lot more risk. So again, I think that that's, like you had said, I have a lot of examples of both wins and losses from both private practice and DSOs, because doctors that get into a private practice have a discussion and it's meaningful. And I think it's well-intended for both parties, but then they don't take the time to really map out that plan, and then it falls apart. And I have a number of clients right now that are in that same boat. They didn't want to go to a DSO because that's what was ingrained in their thinking. And so they went into a private practice and they're a glorified hygienist, but it's private practice. And the great work that they treatment plan mysteriously ends up in the owner doctor's schedule. So I think that's the biggest, again, overarching message is use these resources that you provide or others out there to get your mind thinking what you really want. And usually it's tenets for me of location, experience, you know, the structure of CE, the type of dentistry that you're doing. And then I hate to say it, but, you know, you have to look at compensation and, you know, where you're going to be able to build a life for you, or if applicable, a family.
I want to bite off something that you brought up there. The idea that I had this idea too, Drew, to be honest, that you want to come out and you want to be private practice fee-for-service dentist. That is, in my mind, that's a dinosaur practice right now. That is what everyone wants to be, but that is not the reality of our dental profession right now. My biggest mistake when I opened my office was not accepting more insurances. I am in a blue collar area, and it's just not going to ever be a place where you can run a fee for service office. It's just not possible with the location that I am. Now, that may be possible in a larger city, but I don't see that as that might be what has painted to be the ideal in the past, but I think that is a huge dream. If you're a young dentist right now, it's going to take a lot of work to do that. And to be honest, who's going to want to show up on your first day out of dental school and go to you fee for service when you have no experience? So I think that other end of the spectrum is also kind of painted prettier than it really is in my mind right now, just from what I've seen in my experience. So for all you young dentists, go talk to those offices, but I think that's not reality for most dentists out there right now. Would you agree?
That's my experience. And I think that there's always anomalies. So I always try to be careful not to, you know, get on a soapbox and profess that everything fits into this tidy example, but people way smarter than me that know the economy and study it, you know, there's data to support your statement, your claim, for sure. The other thing, though, that I can relay anecdotally at various chapters in my career is the phenomenon, and I get it, the doctors that have, if you look at population basis too, in the upper Midwest, where I'm at a lot, in Iowa, it's Iowa City, where the school is, in Des Moines, everyone wants to be there. And then also too, there may be one or two that are truly fee-for-service practice in those communities. But if you truly get a colleague or a mentor that will open their books, I can almost guarantee you they participate in not everyone, but a handful of PPO plans or insurance patients to drive patient flow into their practices. Now, if you get out of those and don't go to the little bit more rural markets or even smaller towns, like 10 to 20,000 people, there's not the competitive factor. Those practices can be very selective with insurance providers because they do have leverage because there's not, you know, a dentist on every other corner. So yeah, I think it's, you see that. And then unfortunately, it helps as I've gotten older to just not force an agenda. Like when you and I, hopefully it's okay to share some personal information, but when I tried to recruit you, I just appreciated the fact that you were open-minded. You spent time, you hopped in a car and we drove around and talked to different providers and different doctors. And the best fit was for you not to join our team, but we took a proactive approach to look at that. And yeah, by the time when we first met to when you had decided what your next step was going to be, it looked quite a bit different than when you and I first talked. And I think that's, again, I keep coming back to this, is probably my concern. And it's not just with DSOs, or it's for everyone, is private practice DSOs to make a good fit. You have to have a plan, and then you have to be willing to just have honest conversations about where both parties meet, because turnover, making a bad decision, you never get that time back. And I think that that's probably a fault in our industry as a whole. Like you see people that have gone through 3-4 different associateships or trying to find a partnership. Well, why doesn't it work? And it's usually not just one answer. It's a multitude of different things. And you just never get that time back. And the amount of debt that students come out of school with right now, that can become a pretty heavy anchor if you're not careful.
Yeah, to be honest, back to your conversation about when we met, it was a great experience. I honestly didn't know what I was going to do. I had no clue what the heck I was going to do with my, I was considering residency at the time. I didn't know if I was going to end up in a residency program. I didn't know. I had to start the conversation because you just don't know what opportunities you're going to have. And if you don't go looking for them to see what is out there, what might be for you, there is zero risk for you going out with a recruiter and making a connection. You don't know when you're going to need that connection again later in your life. And to have that experience, you are not committed to anything until you sign that contract. So right. There is zero risk, I think, on both parties to find out if there is going to be a good fit and to find out more information. Because like you said, if you hire the wrong dentist and they only work for you for a year and now you got to go replace them, that has increased cost to you as a DSO and a recruitment officer. So yep. Having that conversation, there's nothing wrong with it. Going to these events when people come in to talk to you and just being able to be a sponge and soak it all in is a great way to start to find out what's right for you. I think, like you said, you need to know what kind of procedures you're going to be doing. You probably don't want to be doing just hygiene all day at an office that you're a partner at or associate at. So those are some great points. What are some things that you do that you can use, I guess, to help find out what's going to be a good fit for a dentist coming out that you're looking to place in a practice?
Oh, I could take that a lot of different directions. So just interrupt me if I go down a rabbit hole, okay? But I think I was blessed, have always been blessed in my career to have a really good supporting operations team. And what I mean by that is, as a recruiter, it wasn't about we call them requisitions. When there's an open job, it's called a requisition. Just fill it and we'll figure it out. The DSO that I worked at, Midwest, and now Smile Brands, the operations team and the recruitment team were really connected at the hip. And so what I mean by that is we wanted to be able to tell the operators, because the operators aren't involved on the front end of the relationship. It's all the recruiter. So again, using our example, like we met at the University of Iowa, we had a couple of discussions and you were just kind of, you know, walking through the process, but I was doing that with 30 or 40 other doctors as well. And so on my communications back to the operations team, I felt fortunate that I could just tell them point blank, here's Dr. Johnson, and or soon to be Dr. Johnson, and here's his skill set, here's his personality. He'd be great with patients and great with staff. He wants to do this, but he's not quite sure. He's weighing options on going into residency. What practices could fit that profile? And that was when recruiting is really fun, is you can go into it open-minded and say, okay, if we were to work together, we probably were going to only do it for a couple of years. That's an advantage of DSOs. They have the ability to transition doctors in. They have that great CE program that's structured. You can take your career coming right out of school, and in my biased opinion, really advance it if you get hooked up with the right one. And then if you want to be ultimately a private practice owner, you've got the skill set, you've got the credibility with the banks, and it's a seamless transition. But I know not every DSO experience has been like that on the counter with regards to recruiting. And I think the pandemic and the labor shortage, it's hard to recruit everyone, not just dentists. I think it's actually hard to recruit hygienists now, but that's a separate discussion. There's so many open requisitions and so much, you just kind of have to slap something together. And that concerns me, because I think then that compounds itself and it'll be more even chaotic, which is stressful. And no one gets the best results when you go through that. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. There are some other things I think we should be aware of as young dentists and looking for DSOs. Like you said, you as a recruiter want to find the office that's going to be the right fit. And I think there's some questions that might be helpful to our listeners to find that out. What are some questions that you find yourself maybe asking these young doctors about their, we call it, I guess, practice philosophy, but a lot of people don't know what that is. What are some questions that you might be asking people to try to figure out what's going to be the best fit for them that they might want to consider asking if someone's not asking it of them to them when they're looking at a practice, whether it's DSO or any practice modality, I think.
Yeah. Thank you. Yep. So this is whether it's because we have at Edge Advisors, we have primarily private practice, traditional owner opportunities, associateships, but they look and feel very similar to our DSO clients that we work for as well. That ultimately, when you're looking at it, it comes down to three different buckets. And a lot of times those buckets or the legs of the stool, whatever analogy you want to use, they don't always align. Usually I'm going to focus initially on, okay, this practice fits in terms of the location, because generally people know where they want to live. And you got to start there usually. In my experience, it feels like a lot of times that less and less doctors are willing to go to the suburban or rural markets. They want to be in the metro markets. But also too, if it's a new grad analogy that we're running with here, they've got a lot of debt. And the higher the competition, the longer it takes to pay off that debt. So we kind of have those discussions right away. But before we're getting into that, let's make sure that you truly understand what, if it's with Midwest or Smile Brands, what's our organizational philosophy? Because each DSO generally does the same thing, but how they do it can vary quite a bit, whether it's the patient bases, the type of technology they use, who they go after for new patients. Each business model is quite a bit different. If you just hop into how much money do you want to make, where do you want to live, you're going to have you run the risk of a flawed relationship, because you got to start with what makes my DSO unique or my private practice client unique. Because, you know, now I've got clients all over in terms of high tech, low tech, huge patient base, or kind of a starter associate position that eventually would turn into a partnership. And for me, that's fun, because if you can't tell, I like to talk. So then you build a relationship and you can kind of help map that out for that particular candidate. And then this is just an advantage of me getting older, is a lot of times the best deals we do are ones that we don't, because you want to give them tools and resources and say, okay, if I listen to how these conversations over the last few weeks have evolved, my client doesn't really fit a lot of these categories. Maybe they really do in terms of the amount of money you can make, but there's a lot of other factors that go into being happy long term besides money. So that just gets people more comfortable to really kind of look at it and use you as an advisor or consultant as opposed to just a quick transaction. So
yeah, it's funny that I know a lot of the young dentists are concerned about debt, but the more and more that I practice and I get to the point where that's whittled down, you realize that it's just, I was talking to one of my colleagues and he said, well, coffins don't have pockets. And you realize, like, why am I, my debt's getting lower. Now, why am I not enjoying life? Why not take a step back and, you know, enjoy the family life, the things you can do outside of dentistry? And I think people need to keep that in mind. It's not, like you said, it's not just about money, because with that is going to come work, and rightfully so, you should be reimbursed for what you do. But you don't also want to be 5 years down the road and you're burnt out of dentistry wondering why you chose this profession. So the longer, like you said, that, you know, you said, you talk about age, and the longer that you live, I think you get more experience and kind of can see that as well. I think one other point is that you kind of brought up is that a lot of these practices have different technologies. And if you want to be doing a lot of implants and the office that you're looking at doesn't do any implants, that may not be the right office for you as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's just, if you delineate it out, there could be 20, 30 different bullet points for every candidate. And that helps. I think this is an anomaly for sure, but that's why I enjoy having a longer term relationship, is it just doesn't materialize overnight. Now, I think it does when I have so I should pivot. I'm talking more doctors that are right out of school. Okay. So if our audience today is a combination of doctors, it is easier for me to work through this a lot quicker with someone that's maybe my age. I'm in my mid to late 40s. They've been there, done that. They really have a pretty defined idea that, and maybe there was just a curveball. We can pick up and run with that pretty quickly.
Back to, I guess, different ages and new dentists versus old dentists. There's a great way that a lot of dentists I know have used transitioning to a DSO to move towards retirement. Can you give a little light on that aspect of how a dentist may sell to a DSO, work for 3 years, and then retire?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. I did that. A lot of the work I did in my career with Midwest was focused on that. So, you know, being very stereotypical here, because there's always exceptions to the rule, but the general rule was I would build relationships with doctors that were baby boomers or kind of starting to think, okay, you know, when it's time for me to cut back and hang up my handpiece, what are my options? And this is one thing that I don't have any data. I didn't come prepared with that, but just how it feels is that as debt load for new grads continues to rise and the complexities of running a private practice if you don't have a consulting or an advisory team like what Edge provides, you're on your own a lot. It's a pretty big piece to bite off right out of dental school to take the traditional method. And also too, banks aren't going to loan a new grad right out of school without some kind of credit history or some kind of experience to underwrite that loan. So a DSO is a perfect fit in terms of a segue that way. For me, again, it was just like the analogy that we talked about with recruiting for an associate position. It's got to make sense for that selling doctor, and it usually comes down to timing. So I'm not privy to say that DSOs pay more than private practices. In fact, I think that's contrary. But what DSOs do offer a lot of times is that nice segue for the owner doctor to be able to transition, get a payday, get paid for their practice. And then you're right, they are going to want that owner doctor, former owner, to stay on and help transition, lead this team through that, And then practice probably for 18 to 24 months post-close. So, you know, that's how the DSO that I worked at grew, was organic, not organically, but by acquiring practices in our footprint that made sense. They shared our practice philosophy in terms of patient care. And it was a win-win, as you would say, because the doctor got a check for his or her practice. The staff had peace of mind to know that they still had a job the next day, and you're off to the races. Now, is that transition easy? No, any transition is tough, whether it's to a DSO or another private practice, because at the end of the day, you have a new owner. And typically those practices, that staff has been there 20, 30, maybe 40 years. And so you integrate a new system in terms of software protocols. That's tough. And so there's other groups. I didn't belong to one, but there's other groups that historically has said, you know, that's so tough. We're just going to go into a community that makes sense for us and open a brand new facility. And we're going to drive new patients in to grow it that way. That's not easy either. So there's a lot of different modalities for DSO growth. But yeah, I think that that was a nice fit and is a nice fit for doctors that are looking for options. And then there's also too, we could talk all day if you let me, but the DSO model has their model. But now I've heard kind of rumblings, and recently there's a lot of private doctors. A few of them are my clients here in the upper Midwest, where they're all private. They don't report to a private equity firm or a board of directors. They're a group of partners, maybe two, three doctors that still practice chairside, and they offer new doctors a chance to start as an associate, but become partners. And so they're calling themselves DPOs, dental partner organizations, where they have a handful of offices. They look and feel very traditional and local. But at the end of the day, they're run by a group of partner doctors. And that's an interesting twist too. So there's opportunity abounds. I think it's just getting hooked up with someone that you can trust and walk through each step of the process with you, and surround yourself with trusted people to make the right decisions and avoid, you know, kind of what we said earlier, losing a year or two right out of the gate.
So Drew, I want to focus a little bit more on what Edge Advisors can offer our listeners. What are some of the services that you think you want to highlight that we could benefit from hearing from as we look to move forward in our dental careers?
Yeah, thanks. I could take that in a lot of different directions. I think the best part to do is say what Edge is not. So Edge isn't a one-stop shop for every single person. So if you hop out on our website, you can see that the vast majority of our clients are private practice doctors. I actually joined the team because he's a close personal friend, but also colleague. Andy Lemkuhl started Edge 13 years ago in Wisconsin. And Andy and I came up dentistry kind of the same path, where not kind of, we were exactly the same. We were recruiters for small group practices in Wisconsin. So we would build relationships at the Midwestern schools and fill those positions and build relationships with those doctors. And Andy, 13 years ago, just made a great decision to branch away and start Edge, because a lot of the practices and doctors that he was working with, he just didn't feel like the promises that he was making on the front end for that organization were able to kind of follow through. So he built Edge by the recruiting avenue, but then also because of the relationships, like I had talked through the practice acquisition efforts of Midwest, Andy and his wife, Jessica, she's our broker at Edge in Wisconsin, were the number one dental transitions provider. So practice sales, brokerage services, we provide that at Edge, only in Wisconsin. But then the also biggest wing probably is when I talked about having a team of trusted advisors. The reason I joined the team, besides my relationship with Andy, is the work that our accounting team does. We have two accounting partners, but a handful of specific dental CPAs that work for our doctors And that's really been neat for me to see that relationship evolve. If they get hooked up with our accounting team right out of school, and then I lean on them a lot of times to provide that structure for partnership to ownership. That's Edge. Those three tenants: recruiting, practice transitions and sales in Wisconsin, and then accounting services. And so now for me, all of the other practice resources that a DSO offers that I had at my disposal with Midwest, I'm building relationships with other providers. So we recruit for doctors coast to coast right now, but our main emphasis is Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa. I have a colleague, Nikki, that does a phenomenal job recruiting. And so that's kind of just, we'll work with doctors that are at various stages of their career and just provide services. I think even though Edge has only been around in 13 years, when you add up the experience between myself, Jessica, Andy, the accounting team, we have contacts and resources for doctors coast to coast that a lot of what we do is just referral based. So I have a doctor right now that I'm working with, actually a fellow Hawkeye of yours, that has a few great practices in Washington, and he needs help recruiting. And he's also talking to our accounting team about his structure and his long-term vision and then a possible exit. And those discussions are fun. It's enjoyable. And I don't know if I answered your question, but we're not everything for everyone because we don't have a full suite of all practice level support, but we have relationships with trusted clients and contacts that help our doctors. And the main tenants are recruiting, accounting, and practice sales.
Yeah. And it sounds like you have a great amount of experience. And like you said earlier, some of the best decisions that you made were the people you didn't move forward with. And I think just starting the conversation, if you're looking at, you know, a private practice modality or one of the areas that you recruit for, just starting the conversation is kind of what I've taken away, and getting the help from someone that's done so many transitions, placed so many dentists, that they're not going to set you up to fail. And I think that's important to have that level of trust. I also want our listeners to know, I'm really excited for this. Tuesday, February 21st at 7 o'clock Central Time, we have one CEU credit coming up for the DSO life cycle. And we have your founder and friend, Andy, that is going to be on the webinar with you as well, Drew. And I looked at your slide deck, and I'm really excited to have you on and just provide some more education. I think kind of maybe shed a little more light on some of the myths that I think that are about there about this practice style. So I look forward to being with you here shortly for that.
Well said. I can't thank you enough for the opportunity. So that'll be here before we know it.
Thank you for listening to Pediatric Dentistry from A to T. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Dr. Johnson, visit us online at www.pediatricdentalce.com. For more tips and tricks, follow Pediatric Dental Seminars on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.